guys. In this week's episode, I had the pleasure of speaking with Tony, who's a registered dietitian. We talk mainly about nutrition and healthy eating, but we also do touch a little bit on body image and weight loss. So in case any of that is triggering for any of you, I just want to let you know you're welcome to exit out of this episode if that is going to cause you any kind of distress. So just before we begin, I kind of wanted to just mention, you know, as a part of my self-love journey, there's just been so many times that I've battled with my body dysmorphia. Well, ever since I was young, actually, but, you know, body dysmorphia, issues with my weight fluctuating, and all of this really, really affected my confidence a lot and just the way that I viewed myself physically. So it really wasn't until like last year, I guess, when I went to go see a naturopath that I started to look more into my gut health, nutrition, and exercising. And then I realized that there's just so much more than just dieting that can help me get to where I want to be. Like, there's so many other little factors, and nutrition is like one of the biggest factors. So speaking with Tony just really helped me, like, kind of just with things that I've been wanting to explore a little bit more about and want to learn more about. And honestly, I learned so much from her. I was taking notes the whole time we were talking. And also just made me realize that dietitians are so underrated. So in this episode also, when you hear it in just a couple of seconds here, you can just tell she's so knowledgeable and so passionate about what she does. And she just helps break down concepts and makes things so much easier to understand. So I hope you guys enjoy this conversation as much as I did. And here it is. I hope you enjoy.
Welcome back, everyone, to an episode of the Self Love Book podcast. Today, I have a special guest, Tony Marinucci. Tony is a registered dietitian, health coach, lifestyle blogger, and podcast host. And maybe something else, I'm not sure. I'm really excited to have Tony on today because I just find that so many people, including myself, struggle so much with body image and issues with weight and what it means to be healthy or feel healthy. There's just so much out there on the internet about what diets to follow in order to lose weight or what kind of meals you need to be eating to be considered healthy. And especially with social media these days, the pressure of needing to look a certain way or do certain things in order to be considered healthy, it can be so mentally and physically tolling on a person. And not to mention confusing because there's just so much out there. So Tony, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I hope you can maybe help shed some light on a few of those topics. And I'd love for you to start with introducing yourself and just telling us a little bit more about what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for that amazing introduction. everything you said really rang true. Unfortunately, the industry is pretty saturated with a mix of information, and it can be really confusing and really overwhelming. And that's actually where I started. So growing up, I was overweight. I was feeling insecure. I was getting teased about my weight. And so I had thought, well, if I lose the weight, I'll be happy. And then everything will be better. My life will be better. And unfortunately, I went to like magazines and kind of just picking up, kind of hearing what like my aunts were doing or, you know, hearing something on the radio. And basically, I went to like that extreme restriction and, you know, trying these like really rigid workouts. And I was doing, you know, I went to the extremes. And as you probably know, that doesn't usually lead to anywhere good. I basically was really stuck in this cycle of undereating and then overeating and then overexercising and then undereating and then overeating and then overexercising. And it was just this vicious cycle. So I realized that this cannot be the way. I do not want this to be the way. I am not happy. I had no energy. I was hangry. I was in a bad mood. I didn't, you know, but the weight wasn't coming off anyway. So I was like, what is the point of this? You know? And so it was really frustrating. So I went to school to become a registered dietitian because I really wanted to learn how to fuel my body. Honestly, it was really like a selfish decision. But then like as time went on, I started learning more and more about food and all the different types of diets and why people would be prescribed a diet versus like lifestyle changes. And I really just absorbed myself with all the information. And I started to actually realize that restriction is not the answer. It's actually part of the problem. And now as a dietitian, you know, going on almost 10 years, my main message is helping people to focus on how food makes them feel, you know, teaching them what they can eat, you know, what makes them feel good and empowered and in charge, and to help them really disassociate this idea that looking a certain way it equates to happiness, right? And it's kind of just reversing that and helping people to, like, you know, decide what's important to them and what makes them feel good, and honoring, you know, their hunger and fullness cues. And, you know, I can go on a little bit more, but we can save that for later in the podcast, in the recording. Yeah. But yeah, basically I help people now, me and my team, we help people now find balance in their eating habits and not so much be on a diet, but really just modify, like, what foods that they eat that are part of their diet that help them to achieve whatever goals they have, but in a very balanced way.
Yeah. And you know what? I feel like even the word diet has so many different connotations to it. Yeah. And oftentimes it's negative. I don't know. I feel like some people, it's even a trigger word for them as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I so relate to when you were saying that you grew up, like, going through all these cycles of, like, not eating and then eating too much. And then you're just feeling like, oh, you just, like, your body just is not accepting that, like, hello, like, what are you doing? Right. Like, it's mm-hmm. just like up and down, up and down. Do you feel like there's kind of like a common denominator when it comes to people trying out diets and stuff like that, or different ways of eating, like cleanses or like keto or stuff like that, that makes so many people, like, come back, be able to do it, maybe lose like 5 pounds in like a week or two, but then they just gain it all back right away? Like, is there like something that makes people, like, gain that weight back?
Well, from a physiological level, like, our bodies are not designed for weight loss. You think about, like, when we're trying to keep, our bodies are designed to keep us alive, and not having, like, you know, not getting adequate calories is a threat to the body. So naturally, if you're under eating, or, you know, and in order to lose weight, you need to be under eating. You know, and not getting, you know, you're not getting adequate calories. So if you do that in the extreme way, there's more modified ways to do it. But if you do that in the extreme way, you know, by cutting out whole food groups or skipping meals or eating like 1200 calories a day, you know, those are things that your body is going to have this natural response. When you start to fuel it again, it's going to now gain that weight and some, because your metabolism has been tampered with. And so that's really important for, I think, people to know. On a physiological level, our bodies are actually not designed for weight loss. They're designed to keep us safe and to protect us. And so when it feels threatened and you're losing weight too quickly, too fast, it will slow down the metabolism to compensate. And then when you gain the weight, it still thinks you're that lower weight. So you're really screwing with your metabolic rate, so on a physiological level. But then there's also, like, the psychological level of your relationship with food and thinking you're not allowed to have something, and the sustainability of it and the reality of it, of, like, you know, I don't know about you, I mean, if you really can tell me that you're completely happy and satisfied with never eating, like, pizza or ordering Chinese or, like, getting a drink on the weekends, or, you know, like, having an ice cream with your loved one, or what, like, if you can genuinely tell me that that's fine with you and your lifestyle, then go for it. But, like, I feel like 90% of people really just don't want to live their life that way. And so when you're doing a diet and you're thinking of it as, like, a temporary thing, as a quick fix, as a short-term thing, and it's like, I'll just do it for a little bit and then I'll go back to living my life. Well, that's a disordered mindset, because that mindset is not real. You know, we are what we repeatedly do. And that's why I really help people commit to a healthier lifestyle and find balance and learn how to have pizza in their daily, you know, in their, you know, week or their month or whatever, how often they want to have it, like, having it kind of fit in, but making sure that it's not taking the place of, you know, fruits and vegetables and lean proteins and, you know, whole grains and all that stuff, but it can be part of your regular day to day. I literally just today threw a frozen pizza in the oven because I was so busy today. It's insane. And I was like, that's all I'm going to be able to have. It's like a frozen veggie pizza. My boyfriend cooked us some chicken sausages, and I had a little bit of a salad kit. Like, I'm like, this is what I got, you know, but it's what I need to do, because we have different shifts in day to day. And then there, you know, tomorrow I have more time and I'll cook a more, you know, more wholesome meal per se, if you want to call it that. And that's just what it is. And you do what works for you in your lifestyle. So a lot of these diets, it's, you know, like I said, from that physiological level, but then also from like a realistic application level, they're not designed for long term. And that's why it's really frustrating to watch, honestly, to see these people lose weight and gain it back and then blame themselves. And it's like, why are you blaming yourself? It wasn't designed for that.
Yeah. Wow. I love that you framed it that way. That actually makes so much sense, because I'm so guilty of doing that 1200 calorie thing. Like, because there's so many things online that just say, like, I'm super guilty of like looking online for like a quick fix once in a while, but it's just saying like, you know, you just got to be in a calorie deficit. That's all you got to do to lose weight. And I think that might be true to a certain degree, but there's so much more behind. Like, it depends, like what you said, it depends on what kind of foods you're eating as well.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it's just, I feel like I do that. And then I also feel like I'm busy throughout the day with my job. And then like, I come home and I'm like, I have so many things to do. And like, I want to eat healthy, but I just don't have the time to cook for myself. Like, I just want to throw something quickly, like a pizza in the oven, or like heat up a meal really quickly. But then I feel so guilty. And then I also feel like that's so common with people too, right? And then that's how they like lose track of their like whatever lifestyle or diet they're trying to follow, because they just don't have time, or they're just too tired and they just can't find themselves to, like, even with when it comes to purchasing groceries, like sometimes it's just expensive to purchase the healthier options, that kind of thing too. And like, I it's just, there's just so much in that, just like the calorie deficit thing alone. Like, I don't know, I feel like if I try and go on a calorie deficit and then I eat like a cupcake, or like I'll have a cheat day or something, I'm like, oh no, all my progress is gone. And then I feel like that's just the bad mindset. Like, now that you kind of framed it that way and I'm thinking about it, do you have any tips for people who feel like that they're like really ruined everything, all the progress they've made, just because they've had like a cheat meal or a cheat day or weekend or something like that?
100%. So first off, you, like I said, you are what you repeatedly do, right? So one cupcake or one piece of pizza, whatever it is, that's not going to affect your progress. And I say this a lot. I say one moment of indulgence won't affect your progress, but how you respond to it will. So what that means is if you have the cupcake and now you say, oh, I screwed up. Well, what's the point? Screw it. I'm just going to have 10 cupcakes. Yeah. Well, was it the cupcake, or was it the cupcake, or was it all of the cupcakes? Right. On the opposite effect, if whether you have all the cupcakes or one cupcake and now you feel bad about it and you feel guilty about it, and now you feel like you need to overcompensate by, you know, exercising excessively the next day or skipping meals or saying, you know what, I'm not eating any sugar for the rest of for 30 days or whatever it is, you know, now you, our bodies are always trying to keep us at equilibrium. That's like, it's fascinating. So we now go to that extreme, and now our relationship with exercise is being tarnished. And now we're exercising to make room for calories or to get rid of calories, rather than just doing it for it because it makes us, it supports our mental health or our physical health. Right now it becomes, it's like a punishment. So now you feel guilty about eating this food. Now you feel guilty that you, now you need to, now you feel like, oh, I have to work out. Then you become resentful for working out. And then that's also why things don't last in the long run. So you really need to disassociate this idea that you're good or bad, whether you have your vegetables or not, whether you have a cookie or not, whether you work out or not. Like, your moral code, you didn't rob a bank because you had a cookie, right? Like, your moral code is not dependent on whether you work out or not, whether you eat a cookie or not, or whatever it is. You really need to disassociate that. And I know it's, listen, it's not easy to do that. It takes time, but it's just this constant reminder of giving yourself permission. And depending on who's listening to this, everyone's in different stages, right? So someone right now needs permission to take a day off from working out. They need to, they need the permission slip to take a day off. Some of you might need that permission slip to allow for the cookie. Some of you might need that permission slip to be like, you know what? It's okay that you had 10 cookies, you know, like whatever it is, or it's okay that you haven't worked out today. Like, it depending on, you know, who I'm talking to, that answer is going to be a little bit different. But I think at the core to all that, it's replacing criticism with compassion. And when you do that, you can really look at it from like a different sort of lens, rather than this very, like, I think when we have this goal and this target, and it also, when it comes from this place of urgency, like, I have to do this, I need to do this. Like, if I don't do this, my whole life is going to, you know, blow up, and that's never true, right? There's never one thing that makes or breaks anything, right? So it's being able to like swap your lens and really come from like a more gentle place and just, you know, talk to yourself. I would say talk to yourself like you would a friend, but I know that there's some people that love like self-deprecating conversations as friends. So I'm not going to say that, but I would say maybe talk to yourself like you would a child. Like, yeah, you know, so would you talk to like a 9-year-old, like, oh, you're so fat, I can't believe you did that. And we'll run for, you know, like that's terrible.
Yeah, so, that's so true. All about the perspective, right? And trying to build that healthy relationship with food rather than just like just hammering down on yourself and just like making yourself just puts you in yourself in such a bad mood. I think we forget how mean we are to ourselves sometimes. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, because I was like going through your website and like I just think it's so beautifully like laid out, so easy to read, so easy to follow. And like I was kind of reading about what you kind of do, and then I was reading one of your things where you kind of talk about in your coaching, you kind of define what an eating archetype is, and I was so interested about what that really means. So yeah. I'd love for you to explain what's an eating archetype.
So the eating archetype is just like the way in which you eat, but I put a fun spin on it because of my book. It's called Once Upon a Diet. It's about the parallels between dieting, dating, and romantic relationships. And I kind of put in a lot of different references in my book. I kind of talk about how, you know, we wonder where our poor body image comes from. We wonder why it is that we feel like we need to look a certain way in order to be loved and accepted and worthy. And it really does stem from childhood. I mean, if you think about watching, you know, all the different Disney movies and all the different Disney princesses, they all had that same hourglass shaped figure. They just were, you know, had different color hair. Basically that's the only thing that differentiated them. So we're constantly seeing that, oh, if you look good, then you get the prince or you get the person or you find love, right? So this pressure to change our appearance has come from a very young age. Now the eating archetype is kind of a spin-off of that, you know, just as a way to kind of like tie it in with the book. Basically what I decided to do is like, you know, your eating archetype is just the way in which you eat. And so everyone has a different eating style. So I broke it down into 4 eating styles and they all are associated with a different Disney princess. So for example, Cinderella is known for being super hopeful. So she really, you know, that can be all these characteristics are beautiful, right? But when they're harnessed correctly, when they're harnessed incorrectly, they can be harmful. So Cinderella, it's a great example of someone who, you know, she was so hopeful, but she stuck to these very rigid and terrible like situations and circumstances that she was put. She was like forced. She was like basically made to be a slave. And she kind of settled for that until finally one day she woke up and she realized, no, I have to do, this is not the way to live, right? Fortunately, her fairy godmother came, but that's a whole other thing. If your fairy godmother's not coming, you're going to have to do it yourself. But like, so Cinderella is known for being hopeful. Ariel is known for being like very curious. So that type of eater. So the hopeful eater, the Cinderella archetype is that very like rigid eater, that very low calorie, high exercise, like very orderly. She has to be, right? She feels like she needs to survive, right? So that's the Cinderella eating archetype. Ariel is known for her curiosity. So that's the person that I would really like, that's really into all the fad diets and the superfoods and the yo-yos and the trends and like, she thinks the grass is greener on the other side, you know, and then she forgets that it's where you water it, you know, so that's that type of eater. We have Snow White, who's known for her kindness. And so that's a blessing and a curse, because it's like, here you have decided to do something and now you're easily influenced because of those who are around you and you sometimes get taken advantage of. And then we have Jasmine, who represents kind of our emotional eater, which is different because Jasmine was always seen as this very, like, she knew what she wanted. She wasn't going to be put in a position that was, like, she wasn't going to marry the person she was set up for. She was going to marry for love. But the vision is kind of like, if she didn't do that and she was kind of living a life that she didn't want to, that was kind of forced upon her, she would probably be more of an emotional eater in that sense. So it's kind of using it in that term. So those are kind of all of them. And so when you go to my website, you can take the quiz and figure out which Disney princess you eat most like. And then I give tips on how to kind of handle, depending on who you are, to learn how to take that characteristic and turn it into a blessing rather than a curse.
That is such a fun and unique analogy. And I feel like that's so easy to follow, because I feel like people relate to the disease, especially women who are the people who are get targeted with all these like dieting and fads and stuff like that. Like, wow, I love that. I feel like I'm the one that I'm the emotional eater, because I just love food. I'm definitely one of those people who live to eat and not eat to live. I feel like life's too short to not enjoy what you want to eat. But then at the same time, I'm just like, sometimes I do get that guilt. I get emotional. I'm just like, you know what? I'm sad today. I'm going to eat some cake. But then, and it brings me so much comfort. But then it's like, after I eat it, I'm like immediate regret. And I'm just like, man, how do I, like, we kind of talked about this a little before, but are you able to kind of explain a little bit more about emotional eating, or if you've encountered this with your clients as well?
Oh yeah, it's a big one. It's what we specialize in. So it's really helping people. Yeah, it's really, that's kind of like our main focal point. Because I think a lot of people too, yes, it's confusing about what to eat, but once you learn what to eat, it's not always knowing it, it's following through with it, right? And then this guilt that feels like you're not supposed to have something. That's really where we help people realize, like, we're disassociating. So we already talked about that part, like disassociating this idea that you're good or bad, depending on if you have dessert or not, right? But it's more so the second part to that is like the relational ties to food, and kind of when you are having, like you said, a really long day, a really busy day, or a sad day, or whatever, food is your comfort. It's knowing that that's also okay. And emotional eating is a very normal thing that we do. But what we want to be mindful of is that it's depending on your goals, right? So if you have specific health goals, if you have a weight management goal, just a general, you know, general health, or maybe you're pre-diabetic or you have high cholesterol or high blood sugar, whatever it is, then we really want to be focused on, like, once again, how do we want to feel and what choices are going to help yield better outcomes. And so it's totally okay to come home sometimes and have a piece of cake or that frozen pizza or whatever it was, right? Because that's what you want in that moment. That's totally fine. But we also want to make sure that these are not things that are just happening because you don't have any other tools in your toolbox, right? So it's knowing that it's okay to emotionally eat. However, we also do know too, like you just said, often like that's the thing we think we want, but that's not the thing we actually need. Right. Yeah. So it's like, what if you had called a friend or went for a walk or taken a bubble bath or just gone to sleep or wrote in your journal or did a quick meditation or maybe also from a physical level, maybe you just didn't eat enough that day and that's why you're having these sugar cravings. Maybe it's not an emotional thing, you know? So whatever it is, it's important to know that it's okay to eat emotionally. However, we don't want it to be our only kind of way to manage our emotions. And I actually do have a little acronym that might help people. Do you mind if I share it?
Yeah, please do. Yeah.
Okay. So when the next time you're kind of on the verge of emotional eating, I want you to pause. Pause is an acronym that stands for P, pay attention, A, assess how you feel, U, understand why you feel that way, S, set up a plan, and then E, execute that plan. So pause, pay attention, assess how you feel, understand why you feel that way, set up a plan, execute that plan. So that way, the next time you're feeling like you think that the ice cream is going to make your sadness go away, remind yourself that if you're going to kind of really think through what does the end of that picture look like, it's like you've been here before. And actually, like, you're going to pause, you're going to assess how you feel sad right now. Okay, understand why you feel that way. Maybe things didn't go as planned at work with a deadline that you had and you couldn't get there and your boss was disappointed in you and you felt sad about that. Okay. Wow. Now, yeah. So set up a plan. Now the plan is like, well, I can have this ice cream, but I know how I feel afterwards. I had ice cream last night. It's okay to have, but if I'm having it every night, now it's become habitual and it's actually not helping me feel any better. So this next plan, actually, you know, maybe it's, I'm going to take a bubble bath, or like I said, whatever you want that to be, you have to explore what works for you. So for some people, they love bubble baths. For some people, they like to journal. For some people, they don't. Some people like yoga. Some people like a walk, depending on where you live and the time of day. Obviously, these are all different factors. Sometimes it could be like late at night. So the answer is like, just go to sleep or change your location, right? So the execution, the plan and the execution, that's where the experimentation process comes in. And that's where patience is required. So for you to understand that you're not always going to just know what that looks like and know what that feels like, what's going to be a better outcome for you or a better thing for you to do, but be patient as you explore it. And then eventually you'll kind of figure out like, oh, you know what? I do best when I journal out my feelings. And I feel really great about that. So I'm going to be, that's going to be my new tool in my toolbox.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm loving these little acronyms and tips and analogies you have going on. It makes it so easy to understand. So building that, continuing to build that healthy relationship, creating boundaries, and then just focusing on yourself as well, and not like trying to think so much about the guilt, but just really thinking about, how do I actually feel in this moment? Because each day is going to look different, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then one thing I wanted to say in relation to your pause technique here, it just reminded me, I saw things, I've seen this online before where it says, I just wanted to see if you would back this up as well. Sometimes if people say if you are feeling really hungry, you should wait 15 minutes and just have a glass of water instead, and then just see if you're still hungry after that. If you're not hungry, it means you were just thirsty. Is that a myth or fact?
Yeah. So sometimes your hunger and thirst cues, your body can confuse. Sometimes we think we're hungry and really we're just thirsty. Mm-hmm. I would just be cautious how often you use that. And I think a lot of people think under eating is what's normal. And so mm-hmm. I would say you're probably hungry because you're hungry. most of the time. But if you had just eaten, then I would drink some water, and then reassess. I don't know how much I love that. It can be helpful, but especially if you if you had three balanced meals that day, you had two snacks or three snacks plus three balanced meals, and you're still hungry, drink some water, assess your day. Did you do a crazy workout that day? Mm-hmm. Are you PMSing? Mm-hmm. Are you super stressed out? What could be, were your meals balanced? Maybe they weren't, So I don't, it can be a helpful tool and technique. I would say mostly when you had just eaten, but I wouldn't do it as a way to maybe I shouldn't have lunch today because I'm not really sure I'm hungry. Water will do the trick. No, absolutely not.
And is water supposed to it's supposed to fill your belly up? Just because, it's just liquid, right? But it's not supposed to be something to fill you up in terms of nutrition or anything.
Yeah, there's no calories. So there's no calories. There's no nutritional value. Yeah. It's from a volume perspective, if you drink a lot of water, your belly's going to be probably feel fuller. You might be a little bloated. It does not replace food at all. And in regards for hydrating, I do believe in mostly water, and you could, if your tea is an herbal tea, that's totally fine. Even technically, yes, coffee, caffeinated beverages, caffeinated tea, there's water in there. So that is helping. But it all comes down to what you're putting in that and how often. And I think drinking, just plain water is definitely a good start, and knowing that, okay, if you can't reach all your water needs to be pure plain water, then it's okay if you get it through seltzer or herbal tea, all that. This idea that caffeine or coffee, I don't know if you've heard coffee is super dehydrating. That's actually not true. All caffeine, diuretics, what they do is they just make you use the bathroom more. So you have to just be conscious of potentially that if you're drinking, if you're losing more fluid, that you're replacing that fluid. But how it affects your body, it's not that dehydrating. Alcohol, on the other hand, is very dehydrating.
Yeah,
so that is something that if you are consuming alcohol, I usually recommend having a glass of water before and after each drink.
Yeah. Now, I want to know how you feel about liquid diets. When people do juice cleanses or smoothies, they're oh, I'm getting my greens, I'm getting fruits, I'm getting water, or, and milk or whatever, is what do you think about that? Is that something people should be doing, or is that something that's okay to do once in a while, but not obviously not sustainable to do?
Yeah. I think that you know, you can eat your fruit and your veggies, and it's usually going to benefit your body more because you have to chew it. Then your body, you know, it has the fiber in it. It's as it travels through your body with the fiber, it pulls cholesterol out of the blood. It helps regulate blood sugars. It also does create that volume. So you're actually less likely to overeat. It, like I said, it maintains blood, it controls blood sugars versus like if you're just having the juice, you know, of the fruit, you're going to get mostly the sugar without that fiber. So It's totally, like I said, it's totally okay to like have a cup of juice with your morning cereal or have a, you know, a smoothie even, you know, as your lunch sometimes. That's totally fine, you know, Having milk, all those things, totally okay. However, if that's your only source of food, not something that I think is going to be sustainable because you're losing a lot of, like you're, for example, let's put it, how do I put this in perspective? Like if you're juicing, you know, an orange, an apple, a mango, a banana, and spinach in One juice, and you now drank that, you'd be hungry again in like 4 seconds. If you ate an apple, a banana, a mango, had some spinach, like you wouldn't be able to finish that all in one sitting. You would be full because it would create volume, it would create bulk. And that's where, depending on your goals, like that's where I usually encourage people to eat their foods. Now, if you have digestive issues, if you really struggle with digesting high fiber foods, that's something that you could slowly introduce those, drink more water, and maybe have some more of those kind of like smoothie beverages. But for the most part, I'm not a big fan of them.
Yeah, I think some people do it that way too because they don't like the taste of, for example, like kale. They don't like to eat like greens, so they're like, just Put it in my smoothie. So then, like, I don't really taste it. But I'm just wondering if you would recommend like any specific foods that are really good that we can incorporate in our everyday lives to be part of a balanced and healthy lifestyle. Like, is it like a good mix of like all the food groups and like they're all whole foods or?
Yeah. So all the food groups are important. So there's not one that's better than the other. So unless you can try to choose certain types of food from each food groups most often, and then you'll probably will yield better health outcomes. So for example, with your vegetables, you know, green veggies are great. If you don't love the bitterness of kale, try baby kale. You know, if you don't like kale at all, that's okay. Try another green vegetable like broccoli. You know, you don't necessarily have to, the vegetables don't have to be green, but the variety of color actually in your veggies is going to be really important. So maybe, you know, throughout the week, you incorporate some green vegetables, some red vegetables, some orange vegetables, some purple vegetables. Like you just go through, you eat the rainbow, right? So getting variety of vegetables. And that's where it's beautiful because there's not one that's better than the other. You just get to choose what you like, what you enjoy, what you have access to, what you're able to cook, you know, all of those things. So vegetables in their whole form most often, fruit in their whole form most often. Wash the skin, but keep the skin on because that's where the fiber lies. You know, incorporating those on a regular basis, knowing that frozen fruits and veggies also count. They're totally fine.
Oh, good. Yeah. I love doing that.
Yeah.
Canned
fruits and vegetables also totally fine. Just be mindful that they're not in too much of like added sodium for the veggies or too much added sugar or syrups for the fruit. Those are totally fine. Your proteins, you want to choose the lean proteins most often. So things like chicken breast or, you know, like a lean, like a, what's it called? Chicken breast or like a lean ground beef or a lean ground turkey or a lean ground chicken. Fish is a great source of protein, like shrimp and halibut and stuff like that. Those are going to be more on the leaner side, but believe it or not, fish is the one thing where actually I encourage people to go with the higher fat options because the fat that comes from the fish is your omega-3 fat. So those are good for your heart. So things like incorporating like salmon or tuna fish or sardines or mackerel, whatever you like, trying to do like a fatty fish twice a week is going to be really good for your heart health. It's totally okay to have like, you know, steak or pork and all that stuff. I would say choose like a pork tenderloin most often, sirloin cuts, the leaner cuts, are going to be better. And then when you use like cooking methods, use baking or grilling or broiling or steaming, really limit the fried options. But it's okay to keep the skin on the meat sometimes, like skin on the chicken is totally okay. But just most of the time going with those leaner choices, using those leaner cooking methods, then you're not going to get a lot of the saturated fat that comes from those animal proteins. Because I like people to incorporate the heart healthy fats, so like those omega-3s from the fish, so cooking with things like olive oil, throwing like nuts and seeds on your salads, or using like hummus or guacamole as a dip, having like an avocado sandwich, or what's it called? Avocado toast, excuse me, in the morning with like an egg on top. Like those are going to be the ways in which I want you to get your fats in from the heart healthy options. So we want to kind of limit it coming from the animal sources, or the, I wouldn't say all animal sources, most animal sources. So that's usually a good option when it comes with your proteins. Your grains, we want to try to keep whole grain most often. There is a time and place for refined grains like white bread, like right before a workout. But for the most part, things that are really going to keep you fuller for longer and maintain that blood sugar and that, regulate your heart health, are going to be higher in fiber. They're going to be whole grains. So things like oatmeal or quinoa, even beans can even kind of go into that category a little bit. Your starchy vegetables, things like potatoes and corn, those are really great options. And then what am I missing? Dairy, depending on your digestive system, if you can tolerate it, a lot of people can, which is great. So choosing, the sources that you enjoy, I would say, but try to do like low fat. You don't necessarily have to go fat free, but maybe low fat, depending on your goal. Honestly, this is where it can be a little hit or miss depending on the person. But really doing more dairy, I would say like yogurt or kefir, those sorts of options are going to be a great kind of additive to your day to day. And also don't be afraid of sprinkling a little cheese on some things, because it just makes the day taste better.
You got that right.
Yeah. So
avocado oil kind of like, because I know avocado. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's good. Okay, because yeah. I was concerned about the fattiness level in there. I know it's a good fat in general to eat avocado, but avocado oil, I've been using it so much because it has like a higher burning point, I think that's what it's called. So then it just like, it cooks, it just makes your food taste a little better, because olive oil, sometimes it just burns too easily.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to know your thoughts on, because I know you said, obviously frying is not great. But what about air fryers when you're not really putting too much oil in there?
Fryers.
Okay. Yeah, good, because I use my air fryer every day. I'm like, no.
Yeah, no, that's different. It's a different type. It's not like it's soaking in the oil, right? It's a different sort of cooking method. It's honestly, it gives it that crunch and that crispiness. But it's not actually like frying it. So air fryers are awesome.
Because I pop my salmon in there sometimes. I like put a little tzatziki on there. I just pop it in and it's so good. It's just like flaky and soft and tender in the middle. But then it's like crispy on the outside. Oh, I was afraid you were going to like, don't use your air fryer. I'm like,
no. And that's the other thing too. I'm always like cautious, because it's like, I just said most of the time. Right? Not every time, most of the time. And now you're already like, oh no, that's bad. No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying focus on what you do most of the time, and know that it's also okay to, it's more than okay. It's delicious sometimes. Like think about it, like whatever, I don't know, like French fries. Hello, they're the best thing ever. Yum. So, potatoes, I can make them in an air fryer and they're good. They're great. But like also like going to a restaurant and just ordering French fries, I'm not asking, did you bake these? Did you air fry these? No, they fried them and they're good and they're delicious.
That's so true.
And they can be part of my meal, so you don't have to. So that's where you have to kind of find the balance.
Something else I wanted to talk to you about is if you kind of, I'm not sure if you know like the gut health space, because that is something I've been exploring since last year, because I would wake up and I would feel so bloated. Like I would look at myself, it literally looked like I just ate a 3-course meal, like first thing when I woke up in the morning, didn't even drink any water yet, and I just found it really abnormal. So I went to a naturopath and I ended up doing this blood test to kind of check for foods that cause inflammation in my gut, and I was shocked at what came back. Well, obviously dairy was one, but and then it came back mushrooms, grain, like whole grains, like there was like like mackerel, like it's just like some of the foods that I would eat every day. Oat. I was drinking and like an oat milk latte every morning, putting oat milk in my cereal, having oatmeal, and I was like, oh no.
It was a blood
So
test, or did you do like a stool test?
It was like a prick, and then it just got sent off for testing, and then so it came back with the high it was more so testing what foods are causing high reactivity in my gut, and those were the ones that came back the strongest. So I was just kind of advised to kind of stay away from those foods and try to stop and then just see how my body felt. I do feel like I felt better and my bloating did go down, but over time I've kind of like tried to start to incorporate a little bit of those foods in and see if they would do anything to me. Sometimes I feel like nothing happens, and then other times I feel like my body goes out of whack. So I don't know, like I don't know if like I just know like your gut is like it's one of the things that are like controlling, like, you know, the way you digest and like the way you feel sometimes. And like I feel like it has to do with like, you know, how you're, what you're eating, obviously, too. So I don't know if you have anything you can share about that gut health space.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we could have a whole other podcast about this, so I'll try to keep it so short. Okay. But basically, yeah, your gut is everything. It's where most of your immune system lies. It literally sends messengers to the brain. So if you're feeling really depressed or sad, and not, this is not, I'm not saying heal your gut, heal your depression. I'm not saying that at all, but I am saying that everything is connected. So everything is connected. And so what's interesting is that whatever was going on in your gut, I think people blame the food, but really it, what it is that if there's something going on in your gut, then certain foods, it's going to be harder for you to tolerate those foods. But if you heal your gut, then you can actually tolerate those foods that once bothered you before. So what's interesting is that even so, those blood tests are not 100% accurate. And often what they come back is they come back showing the antibodies of the things that you usually eat on a regular basis. So that's why it shows. So if you felt relief from getting for limiting them or for removing them, then I would say listen to that, because our bodies are, you know, different and always changing. At the same time, like you still want to work on like healing your gut. So there could be so many things though. That's why, you know, I do believe in naturopaths. It depends on the type and the person, I would say. There's so many different, you know, there's so many different ones out there, just like there's different doctors, different dietitians, you know, it's very hit or miss. But I do believe in their practice as a whole. I do feel like it's a really great complement to what we do as dietitians. And then also, you know, it's a good, I believe everybody, I think everything fits, Western medicine, naturopathy. I think it's all, okay, we can all make it work together. With that said, you know, usual, like a general gastroenterologist, I usually tell people that's the first place to go. Did you see a gastroenterologist first?
No, I didn't. But it was just a naturopath, but she did kind of explain about like that SIBO thing and like the large.
Did you have SIBO?
I don't know. She said the test came back and she like said it doesn't look like I do. It just seems
okay.
Like,
so at least you were tested for other things.
Yeah.
So that's good. So because I was going to say, a lot of people will go to a gastroenterologist and then they go to a functional medicine doctor because the gastroenterologist basically just labeled them as like IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, which is basically, it means like if you rule out celiac disease, if you rule out, you know, diverticulitis, if you rule out H. pylori, if you rule out like kind of like the ones that it's very clear, like if this shows up in your blood or if this shows up, like then this is what you have. And then IBS is basically just like, it could be constipation or diarrhea or bloating or whatever these experiences. And it's like, well, we don't actually know what you have. So like, we're just going to say that you have IBS. And like, people are like, well, what does that mean? I don't know. That's frustrating. Like, what do I do? So then they seek a naturopath, which I wish they would also seek dietitians, because that's actually our specialty. our specialty is helping you to figure out what foods work best for you. But I would just say, like, because bloating can come from so many things. It could be related to chronic stress. It could be related to, like you said, maybe eating certain foods that maybe didn't agree with your body, or being sensitive or allergic to foods. It could actually be from chronic under eating, believe it or not. That could be an option, a reason. It could be that maybe, you know what, we don't know what's going on. Maybe it is more like IBS and your body doesn't really tolerate certain foods. Like maybe, you know, when you have beans, like you're in the toilet all day long. So like, let's not eat beans, you know, whatever it is. So like, this is where it's important to really know you and your body, and sometimes keeping like a food journal, writing down your foods. That's what we do with clients. Like, we'll have our clients take pictures of their food and then like start to document like felt when they felt bloated, when they felt fine. We even take track of like their bowel movements, how often, what do they look like? Like, I know it sounds like TMI, but honestly, like, this is what we talk about because this is what helps us help our clients.
Yeah,
because we want you to have regular poops every day, because if you're having regular poops every day, then you are having, you have a healthy gut. If you're feeling bloated all the time, if you're not going to the bathroom every day, if you're going to the bathroom too much, you know, this is all kind of us showing like, okay, we need to find balance in that. So quick tips on gut health healing. So I would just say, if you haven't seen a gastroenterologist, reach out to one. If you have questions, just message me on Instagram. I'm at tips_with_Tony with an I. And I also have really great connections to a naturopath as well, if anybody needs like further assistance. But all that to say, like, in the meantime, what you can do is, believe it or not, those three balanced meals a day, whether you're trying to stop the emotional eating or stop the cycle of overeating, whether you have a weight management goal, whether you just have a general health goal, whether you have a gut health goal, three balanced meals a day, which each meal to incorporate a complex carbohydrate, a lean protein, a healthy fat, and some fruit or vegetable. That is the secret combo. Like, that is it. That's going to solve like 90% of your problems.
Taking all these notes down.
Yeah.
Right now.
that, drinking plenty of water, getting adequate sleep, and moving your body consistently. I mean, those are the foundational things to your health. And then, oh, and stress management. Mm-hmm. So I know I'm saying it and it sounds super simple, but we know that from a practical level of implementation, it can be hard to make habits out of good quality sleep. And it can be hard to make habits out of like planning and preparing healthy, balanced meals. And it can be difficult to find movement that you enjoy and making sure that you're taking rest days and not stressing yourself out too much. And it can be challenging when it comes to stress management and setting boundaries. Like, I hear you, it's not easy, but that's why we do what we do as dietitians. That's why I have my team. We make it easier for you to implement those things. And it's going to be a lot easier for you to just like navigate life and have a healthier body and be a better, just feel better all around.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Amazing. Well, thank you so, so much for joining me today. Like, I feel like I've learned so much and like, I'm just like going to keep like going through your website. I'm going to like check out everything. Yeah. And can you let everybody know where they can get your book, the Once Upon a Diet book, and then where else we can find you?
Yes. So my book is on Amazon. You can get the hard, the paperback. You can listen to it on Audible, or you can download the Kindle version. So it's Once Upon a Diet on Amazon. You can find more about me or contact me and my team. I'm on Instagram at tips_with_Tony with an I. And you can head over to my website to take that Disney Princess quiz to see which Disney Princess you eat like, or apply for coaching or take a course. You could just explore my website at tipswithtony.com.
Amazing. And you guys, have actually checked out her course and it's such a good deal. Like, that's an amazing price for what you're getting.
Thank you.
I'm seeing a lot of people charge an arm and a leg out there, but this is great. I really recommend you guys check that out. Check out her website for sure. And I'm going to leave all the links in the show notes. Thank you so much again, Tony.
You're so welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Self Love Book Podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. I had such a good time recording with Tony. She's honestly so knowledgeable, and I really hope that you do check out her links in the show notes. And I hope that everyone is going to have a fantastic day, week, or night ahead of them. And I'll talk to you guys next time. Bye, guys.